Lynn and I, too, feel privileged to be with you here at Waynesville. We're happy for all the things that are going on and for all the good that's being done, and we're grateful for all that are still trying to teach those that are lost, and we certainly appreciate your efforts as well as the efforts of all in what we're trying to do in both a physical way and a spiritual way together, and we're grateful for that and for the encouragement we receive. In the first lesson, we talked about Ezekiel, and I didn't mean to imply that Ezekiel was there when I got to think about this back there. I'm not sure how I said it. But he wasn't there when Jerusalem was destroyed. He was taken into captivity about 597. So just wanted to let you know that. But prophetically, he knew about the destruction of Jerusalem. He would talk to them about that, and he would let them know. But that wasn't what made him fear. What made him fear was God. And that's, I hope, the point we got out of all those things from Ezekiel 1, verse 3, or chapters 1 through chapters 3, and letting us look at that, what he saw. We talked about fear, how it affects us, and how we react to it, and how we lose our bodily functions sometimes. We don't control them, and how we may just shake and all of that. We discussed what Ezekiel saw, and we learned that Ezekiel knew who to fear. He did not fear the things of this life. We can see his standing there and watching that happen. And so we all have those examples in our lives of things we feared. He didn't fear those creations of God, but God himself. We're going to talk about that even more in this lesson. So let's look at proper fear defined. Fear has different meanings in the Bible. There's a lot of times you'll see, depending on the translation you have, it can be translated in many different ways. Or it may just be translated fear, because that's a word that fits a lot of different categories. So we're not going to go through all of them, but just give you some meanings. Dread, reverence, afraid, alarm, terror, fright. Those are all things that we can equate fear with. But I'm afraid that what we've done, we've limited fear of God to just reverence. Now, we should have great reverence for God. But I think the Bible clearly, just like I used the passage where Paul said, knowing therefore the terror of the Lord. I mean, we know it. And we don't ever forget that. Roger and I just had a conversation recently about this. About we are not, I think, as fearful as we should be. I just don't think, because we don't have that understanding, even like of Ezekiel, who fell down before him and didn't even see God. He saw something that was representative of God, and even that caused him to fall down. And you think about that. He wasn't falling down because of the throne. He wasn't falling down because of the rainbow. He was falling down because of the one that had the appearance and the likeness of a man, and he knew that was God, and he understood that when God spoke, all that other stuff that he saw quit. Isn't that amazing? Does that remind you of anyone in the New Testament? The power over nature? So sometimes it's determined by context, so just keep that in mind. But let's look at this. Proper fear is necessary. It's not a matter of, well, that would be a good thing. It's necessary. God will punish and destroy. This is not the part of God that most of us want to talk about all the time, but I'll tell you, we have plenty of examples of it. Let's just, for instance, remember the flood. Do you, or do I, fully comprehend that? How many people died that day? Does anyone know? All but eight. I do know that. That's God. You know why? They didn't have a proper fear and reverence of God. Each one of them did what he wanted to. And in Genesis 6 it said he would destroy man. He was sorry that he made them. In 2 Peter 3, in the discussion of this, and again, I put all the scripture up there, 3, 1 through 7, not going to use all of them. But in 2 Peter 3, in the discussion of this, he clearly says, this they willingly forgot. That's why we lose our fear, we forget. Do you ever go along in life and you just forget? Most of us like to forget bad things. We just don't want to remember them. It's just not something we want to dwell on. That's great. This better be something we never forget. And better never willingly forget. He says he destroyed everything. The earth standing out of the water, in the water, by which the world that then existed perished. That's God. Let's don't ever forget that. Let's be willing to fall down on our face before Him. Sodom and Gomorrah and the other. We mentioned these two cities, but said the other cities of the plains there were destroyed as well. But He mentions these two in particular by name. How much was left of those cities and the people were there? How many people died that day? I don't know. Four of them left. Three of them survived. I know that. And he says in 2 Peter 2, verse 6, just in case, Peter says, you better remember this, turn the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes. It wasn't just the cities, it was the people. That's God. He means it. We forget. Making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly. Why would we even take time to read about Sodom and Gomorrah? Jesus mentioned them. The Bible, New Testament, mentions them several times. Why? As a warning to those who later would want to live ungodly. What is it about us that makes us think we can lose that fear of God? He wouldn't do that to us. That's not the God that I know. That's the God I know. I don't know about these people that don't want to know this God, but I know Him. Nadab and Abihu. In Leviticus 10, 1 through 2. Fire came out from the Lord and devoured them. Have you ever thought about this in context there? They bring profane fire before God. He says, I'll show you fire. Just like that. They came in and carried out what was left of it. And here's his father, their father, and their two brothers there. And he says, I'll tell you what, you better not go out or I'll kill you too. You think they didn't fear God? You think Aaron said, well, this is okay. I can... No, he stayed right where he was. He listened to what God had to say. This is God. All they needed to do was reverence God and do what He asked. Oh, just a minor thing they did. We don't know for sure what all that meant about profane fire. We don't know for sure whether it was the wrong fire they were supposed to bring or the incense or whatever it was they were supposed to do. But whatever it wasn't right. They didn't fear God. Ananias and Sapphira in the New Testament in Acts 5, 1 through 11. How quick was it? I'll tell you how quick it was. Because they lied to the Holy Spirit, God, they died. How quick was it? Right then and there. And fear, it says, fell on the whole church. That's fear. What is it about that that we think, well, God doesn't do that. He wouldn't do that today. People don't do that. People don't die today. Let's look at some reactions in the Bible. Belshazzar in Daniel 5, 1 through 9, when the fingers were writing on the wall, you remember that? Just some fingers? And he's watching this, and he sees it. And his reaction, we laugh at. I even saw Rochelle with a smile on her face. She already knows. It's funny. I'll tell you what Abe Martin had been doing right then and there. My legs have been shaking too, and I beat it. And he said his knees were knocking together. That occurred to me one time. I'm not going to tell you the circumstances, but my knees were knocking together, and I had to support them with something. You think it don't happen to us? But this is not just any occasion. This is God presenting something to him, and his reaction is totally wrong. He does not repent before God. Here he is. In Babylon, his father has left him there to take care of that city. And how does he take care of it? He's out there partying. And God offers him this chance and says, this night your kingdoms will be taken from you. Wouldn't you fall down prostrate before God? No. Not him. Stubborn to the end. No fear. None. Not the right kind. He had fear, but it didn't do anything for him like it should have. Paul in Acts 9, a little bit different story. This vision comes, and what immediately happens? He falls down on his knees. Falls down. Immediately. Paul, who was a man who had been killing Christians or having them killed, sees this vision of our Lord and Savior and immediately recognizes Him for who He is and doesn't question this at all. He just asks, "Who are you?" "Well, I'm the one you're persecuting." John, Revelation 1. John had been with Jesus all these years. Spent great time with Him. Knew Him as the Son of God. Confessed Him as the Son of God. Had seen Him at the Mount of Transfiguration. Had seen His glory shine through. Had even mentioned it in 1 John 1. Knew who He was. Suddenly sees one like the Son of Man standing there, and this exact image of God that was given in the Old Testament, almost identical, we see in Jesus Christ. And what is His reaction? Remember, He had associated with Him. He had leaned on His breast in human form. He had been with Him the whole time and even talked about the one that He loved. And now sees Him in heaven. And what's the reaction? "But when I saw Him, I fell at His feet as dead." That's the proper reaction. So, I'm not going to justify us here. But you can start to see us in the John, can't you? People would prefer, wouldn't they, to remember Jesus Christ just a man? They'd prefer to remember Him as just a baby. They prefer that. But even the soldiers in John 18, something occurred here. I've read this several times and it amazes me. They came up and Jesus said, "Whom are you seeking?" And they answered, "Jesus of Nazareth." And Jesus said to them, don't forget the "He" there. Jesus didn't say that. Jesus said, "I am." When He said to them, "I am," they drew back and fell to the ground. That's a proper reaction. Unfortunately, it didn't last very long, did it? They ended up taking Him to have Him crucified. But with God, there should be total awe. In the 33rd Psalm, verse 8, "Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of Him." That song, I stand in awe of you. That didn't originate with a human being thinking that up. It originated from David being inspired to write that about God. I hate that the word awesome's been changed. It's another word that's been so totally changed. Awesome now can just mean, well, my hair turned out awesome today. Really? I hate it. I hate our words that have been changed. I wish we had a word that we could stick with God. He is awesome. And it's not awesome in the sense of, I bought a new car and it's awesome. He is awesome. We should be awestruck by Him. As Moses would put this in Deuteronomy 10, he said, let me tell you why He's awesome. He's the only one, as he talks about, that won't do what man does. "For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality or takes a bribe." Wow, we're not used to that, are we? He's not like man. "He administers justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the stranger, giving them food and clothing. Therefore love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve Him, and to Him you shall hold fast and take oath in His name. He is your praise. He is your God, who has done for you these great and awesome things which your eyes have seen." No, those are awesome. He is awesome. Nehemiah 1:5, it says, He's awesome because He honors His covenants. You see, we mess up sometimes, don't we? We say, I'll be there, I'll do this, and we don't. God never says that and doesn't do it. He's holy. He is holy, and that's why we need to fear Him. He is not just partially holy. He is not kind of holy. He is fully holy. There is no blame to be brought at His feet. The Lord reigns. Let the peoples tremble. He dwells between the cherubim. Let the earth be moved. The Lord is great in Zion. He is high above all the peoples. Let them praise Your great and awesome name. He is holy. The Lord's strength also loves justice. You have established equity. You have executed justice and righteousness in Jacob. Exalt the Lord our God. Worship at His footstool, for He's holy. And He alone is deserving. There's no one else deserving. Only God deserves worship. In Revelation 22, as this angel is presenting this to John, John falls down at his feet and he says, Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. I'm your fellow servant and of your brethren the prophet and of those who keep the words of the book. I'm no different than those humans, he said, that are doing this. Just worship Him. Worship God. Worship God. Because John had fallen down at the feet, he said, of this angel. Proper fear is a positive thing, though. I think we forget this. It's a positive thing. It's not a negative thing. It's a good thing. I would argue that fear is one of the best motivators there is, wouldn't you? My dad motivated me a lot. I was so motivated that he could just look at me sometimes and I would be motivated. He could say to me, if you don't do that, I was motivated. It just motivated me. I just wanted so badly to do that for him. Matthew 10:28, Jesus said it clearly. Do not fear him to destroy the body, but fear him that can destroy both body and soul in hell. It's positive, though. That's not a negative thing. That's a positive thing. Because it brings about obedience. Abraham, Genesis 22:12. He was getting ready to offer Isaac. And what does it say there? Well, now I know. You fear me. Isn't that something? What prompted him to do that? Well, we know Abraham was an obedient man. It prompted him to be obedient. Ezra, in Ezra 8:21-23, you remember this in our study in the class up here, and we talked about the fact that he said, I was ashamed to ask the king for some guards, because I was more afraid of God, basically, than I was of him. We'd ask God to take care of us, and I didn't want to say anything about it. So we just said, God will take care of it. I mean, they're carrying millions of dollars, as we look at it today. They're traveling through some enemy's territory, and they know, just not just a few people, everybody along the route or route hates them. But which one did they fear the most? God? He feared God. He thought God would do it. How about Noah in Hebrews 11:7? He moved with godly fear and built the ark. What? How would you like to have your family, eight of you, in this little world, looking around at everybody else that hates your guts and thinking, well, you idiots, you're worshiping who? There's a God? Oh, you can imagine how much fun was made of them. And you're building what? I don't know what all went on, but I tell you what. All of those people. Let's just say there was 1 million peoples all existed on the earth. Let's just say there was 1 million. They're all against you. Think about that for a moment. Which one you fear the most? Which one are you willing to give in to? Which one are you going to obey God, or are you going to listen to them? Fear helps us overcome sin. It'll help us. It'll make us think, do I really want to suffer the consequences of that if I do it? There's other things that need to be here. We're talking about fear today. Romans 8:1-9, he discusses this. He talks about how Jesus took away that law that's been discussed in the chapter before. How now you can get away from sin. How sin is an enmity with God. And he talks about in verse 8, so then those who are in the flesh cannot please God, but we're not of the flesh, we're the Spirit. How it helps us to get away from sin. And we know who we're debtors to. And he says in verse 14, "For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God." But now let's look at the reverse of that. Starting with verse 10, he talks about this in chapter 3 of Romans. "As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none who understands. There is none who seeks after God." Of course, he's quoting the psalmist here. "They have all gone out of the way. They have together become unprofitable. There is none who does good, no, not one. Their throat is an open tomb. With their tongues they have practiced deceit. The poison of asp is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the ways of peace they have not known." Now, what would cause someone to be in this miserable, sinful condition? And what would keep them there? Can you think of any reason to stay in that? There is no fear of God before their eyes. A little bit? None. None. They don't even recognize who they are as a created being. They make fun of those of us that would. But I'll tell you, in Job we see a man who understood that without the revealed will of God. If you think about this man who couldn't say, let's turn over to and read what David wrote. And here he is, what would cause him to live the way he did? "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright and one who feared God and shunned evil." That'll take care of it. Do you know why I sin? Because at that moment I don't fear God like I should. I just don't get it. That's one of our problems. But here's the beauty of this. What do you normally do when you're fearful? You run. You get away. You shake, right? You don't want to be there for whatever reason. You ever thought about this, though? Total different reaction with God, isn't it? Did you see Ezekiel running? He just fell down before God. In the presence of God, he realized, this is wonderful. This is not a bad thing. He showed his reverence to him and he stayed right there. It will cause us to approach God. Forget the not there. So if Roger puts this online, he needs to change this, or I do one. But it'll cause us to want to approach God, not try and flee him. Want him? We won't be like Jonah. "Jonah, go teach those Ninevites." "Whoa. Now wait, God. I got a better idea." I mean, what was Jonah thinking? Isn't it easy to look back there and say, what do you think he was going to go and get away from God? Didn't the psalmist already say, you can get away from God? You go into Hadean world, there's God. You go up in the sky, there's God. You go any part of this world, there's God. How do you get away from God? You can't. But Jonah in his mind thought, I'll flee. I'll get away from God. And we do the same thing, don't we? I get in that dark corner and I'll just flee. I'll get away. Need more. Be more like an Isaiah. Isaiah 6, he sees this, again, this vision of heaven. A vision that God gives him. And his reaction is really strong. He sees this wonderful vision and it just takes him over. He knows he's in the presence of God in the sense of he's seeing this and he knows he's in trouble. He knows this. He doesn't flee, though. He stays right there. And his first reaction in verse 5 is, woe is me, I'm undone. I'm sinful. I can't be here in the presence of God. I just can't do this. And the seraphim comes and touches his tongue with a live coal. You remember this? And says, it's okay. God's taking care of this. You now can be here. He's like, okay. All right. Now, so he stays. His reverence is still there. And the next reaction is, verse 8, when it is asked, well, who are we going to send? Who are we going to send? And he says, well, here am I, send me. You see, he didn't flee God. He got closer to God. His fear caused him to want to get closer to the one that could take care of him. Closer to the one that would be there for him. Closer to the one that created him. Like Thomas did. I thought of this several times, and Jesus said, reach your hand in here. I want to show you, Thomas, that I am who I said I was. And I have come back from the dead. And Thomas' response is, well, no, I need more than that. No, it wasn't. My Lord and my God. That's powerful. It's a recognition. It's an understanding of who we serve. You see, we serve Him not from running away from Him, but by coming closer to Him. We show our fear to Him not from running away from Him, but by getting closer to Him every day of our life. The one that can take care of us. And I think I can help with this. As much as I feared my dad, and believe me, I did, when I needed someone to protect me, you know where I went? I got closer to Him. I wanted Him to take care of me. That's who I went to. And that's the way it should be with God. It should be not run away from Him. Get closer to Him. He's the one that we need to bow down to. He's the one we need to respect. We want to be around that throne forever. We don't want to get away from Him. We want to get close to Him. And in Psalm 2, verse 11, serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest He be angry and you perish in the way when His wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are those who put their trust in Him. Do you know how close you have to get to the Son to kiss Him? You don't want to be like a Judas that goes up and kisses Him, betraying Him. Kiss the Son. Get close as you can to Him. Get close to God. Maintain that great reverence and fear. In Psalm 34, why do we want to do this? Because He's the one that takes care of us. If we really believe in Him, Ezra said, it worked out good. You know, we prayed to God and God kept us safe on our journey. Amazing, isn't it? How else could they have made that journey if not for God? Couldn't have. In Psalm 34, verse 7, the angel of the Lord encamps all around those who fear Him and delivers them. Does that not present such a beautiful picture in your mind? Do you think God has quit this? Do you think angels still aren't those ministering spirits in Hebrews 1, verse 14? Do you think they weren't created and then to serve humankind? We created beings who are lower in power than them, and yet they're taking care of us and they encamp us. Do you really fear then what man can do to you? Sure, he can take your life. In the 103rd Psalm, more importantly than my physical well-being is my spiritual well-being. If I fear God, I'll truly believe that He can take care of my sins. In the 103rd Psalm, He talks about sin and how far God can remove it from us. How He can cast it as far as the east is from the west. And it doesn't get any further than that, does it? Because east and west never meet. Never do. But here's the beauty of it. This is why we need to get closer to God. In verse 12, He says He's removed our transgressions from us as a father pities his children. There was times when my dad actually pitied me. I didn't know that for a long time until I probably had my own children, but then I realized he was pitying me. He could have done a lot more to me than he did, but he quit. So the Lord pities those who fear Him. For He knows our frame. He remembers that we're dust. Did God forget that? That's not what it's talking about. He knows all the time we are. If He could just instantaneously kill Nadab and Abihu, if He could instantly bring a flood upon this earth, if He can instantly kill Ananias and Sapphira, the reverse of that's equally true. For those that will follow Him and get close to Him, He will take care of and remove their sins from them. And the beauty of this is, I want my sins removed. And as a result of that, not on the basis of, I'm going to approach Him and I'm going to say to God, well, you remember those good works I did, God? You remember how I deserve salvation, God? You remember how I thought up some really wonderful things to do for You, God? No, those will get me in trouble. Those will get me in trouble. See, my confidence is not in any way with me. I have total confidence in Him. I am assured of my salvation. I don't even doubt it at all. Why? Because I'm so good? No. Because He is. And now, little children, abide in Him, that when He appears, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before Him at His coming. Don't have to, on the basis of us. Why? Well, I want you to think about this passage maybe from a little different viewpoint. In 1 John 4, 17 through 19, love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Didn't I just mention that? I can have that boldness. I can have that confidence. In me? No. In that hope, desire plus expectation. On the basis of me deserving it? No. Because as He is, so are we in this world. I've tried to change my life to conform to His. He taught me what to do. He took care of my sins. There is no fear in love. But perfect love casts out fear. Because fear involves torment. You see, if I just had to think about God destroying me all the time, I'd be tormented day and night. Wouldn't you? Just like that man, remember, the rich man, tormented day and night. I don't want to be tormented day and night. I want to be confident in God. I want my trust in Him. But he who fears has not been made perfect in love, because we love Him because He first loved us. So what's this all about? I'll just use one passage Jesus used in John 15:13. What does He say love is? When a person, a being, is willing to give up their life for their friend. Greater love has no one than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends. He's talking about his upcoming death. He's letting it be known this is the greatest love. You won't see greater love any other time. I don't care how many times I might give my body up, there will never be greater love than what Jesus did on that cross. That's why perfect love casts out my fear. Because of the love that He showed me on that cross by giving up His life, as you used in your prayer, Roger, the joy that was set before Him and knowing what the results was going to be, despising the shame, and then sit down at the right hand of the throne of His Father in heaven. You think about this. That's why proper fear brings us to God, because we now understand proper love and perfect love. We try to emulate it. We're not going to get there. But because of His love and laying down His life for us, we now can have salvation and we can be confident in judgment before Him. Do we have proper fear, though? I'm going to say it again. No. Can we work on it? We better be working on it every day of our life. We better try to grasp that. We better think of things in our mind that would help us with this, because we better read these examples over and over and over again. So many of those Old Testament examples should just strike fear in our heart about what God's capable of doing. Do we truly understand His character? I know Roger Jr. and I had this conversation and we both agreed we do not. It's just not possible. It's not possible. But He has revealed Himself to us, and He said He shows us through His revelation and through His creation who He is. But even with that, we struggle. We've seen God by faith in Jesus Christ. I would argue they didn't properly fear Christ, wouldn't you? They didn't properly fear Him. And He died to save all sinners. Not just some, but all. He will judge, though, everyone according to His Word, and that's what we need to fear. So, are you prepared to meet God? Am I prepared to meet God? If we're not, let's make some changes today. Would you please stand?